Welcome to the Keswick Convention podcast. My name's James Carey, and my guest this time is not just a pastor, but a part-time superhero Captain Awesomeness and half of Awesome Cutlery. We will explain what that means in due course, but for now, let us welcome Gareth Lowe. Hello, Gareth.
Hi, James.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast. We'd like to start by talking about our journey to faith. How did that happen for you? How did you come to know the Lord Jesus?
My journey to knowing Jesus and following him is almost entirely unremarkable, which, as I've reflected on it over the years, is a great blessing. So I grew up in a Christian home. Both my parents wanted me to come to church and hear for myself. And with the backdrop of that, when I think of a moment, things came together for me. I was 8 years old. I was at Spring Harvest and had been going to the kids' work each day. And I remember on the last night, I can't really tell you anything of what we were told on that week. But I remember on the last night they did a appeal to say, if anyone would like a leader to come and pray with them, put your hand up and we'll come and pray with you. And maybe some of you want to become a Christian. And I remember thinking, in probably one of the most mature things I've ever thought, particularly given my stage then, was, I think I do want to become a Christian, but maybe it's the setting that makes me want to do that. So why don't I not do it now? And I'll go home and see in a week or so, if I still want to become a Christian, then I must really want to.
Wow, you're not kidding. That is an extremely, I'm going to say precocious thing to do, but a very level-headed thing to do.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe it's been downhill from there ever since. For me, in terms of good decision making, but I remember coming home, and then a week later, saying to my parents, "I'd like to become a Christian." And I went into their bedroom. I can still picture the absolutely terrible duvet cover, which is like this pink, brown, weird, flowery pattern. I remember seeing on that, and they said, "Oh, pray this kind of prayer that you're sorry for your sin, and thank you that Jesus died for you, and please would he forgive you." And so I prayed it then. And then ever since, I've been following Jesus, and not because I'm any good, but because he is.
Wow. Well, that is very encouraging, because as you would know, given some of your ministry, that most adult Christians became Christians as children, before the age of 10 or 11, in fact, isn't it? That's what the stats would suggest. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely, I'm only one small part of that stat, but it's certainly common. And I think that's encouraging in lots of ways, particularly when we think about, there's so much to teach in the Bible, and we want people to really know everything before they might commit. I don't really know what I understood as an eight-year-old. And even if you'd asked me, you probably wouldn't get a very clear answer, because I was eight. But that was a real, genuine God intervention in my life. And since then, I think one of the things that's been a real privilege for me is God's given me, he's matched my faith with my shoes almost. Like, as your shoe size grows, you get given new shoes and you think, oh, I'm just out of these ones, but then you get new ones and it's all right again. I've had the same experience for knowing God. So I've never grown out of him. I know some people face that challenge and think, oh yeah, that's what I believed at Sunday school and I'm a bit too old for it now. I'm 15. But every time I got, I think, to a significant stage, so when I was 13, we moved church because we moved house, and this new church had a bigger youth group and I think taught the Bible better, and that was great for me. Then when I went to university, I got involved with a church there who were really great at teaching me how to think about the gospel and what it was, how I might explain it to others, and that was great. Yeah. And I've just had that a number of times. God has said, okay, you've grown this much, now here's a new pair of shoes. And I'm still in, there's still plenty of room to grow in the ones I'm in at the moment.
That's really interesting. I've never really thought about it like that. It feels like, like snakes shedding their skin and that kind of thing, isn't it? That's a really real encouragement to see that actually our pastor is God.
Yeah.
And he is presenting us with opportunities to serve, to learn, to think, to change what we do, and then move us on and mature us in the faith. As you've matured in the faith, are there, you've mentioned these little stages, but are there kind of key books or key people that maybe have had an influence on you?
Certainly in my teen years, there were a number of people at church, and a bit like I was saying right at the beginning, just very, very unremarkable. You couldn't make a film of my life, or probably of the people that I hung out with at church. particularly thinking of the adults and my youth group leaders and those then another generation or so up in the church, the power of people faithfully living for Jesus, just keeping going. And I definitely, there's, you know, things they told me that have stuck in my mind. I remember one guy just before I went to uni saying, a big thing in the Bible is people, you know, nailing their colors to the mast, saying, this is what I stand for, and this is an opportunity for you to do it. And I took that to heart, and I realized that as going into uni, that was a big moment. But it was very normal. So they were, I wouldn't say one person. There's a collection of people who share their lives with me, were normal with me, and kept following Jesus themselves. Yeah. So that's particularly for teenage years.
Well, that's a real encouragement, just to pause there for a moment, because, you know, there are lots of people listening to this podcast, I'm sure, who are involved in various ministries that just seem incredibly ordinary, and that they don't feel like they are, they're not giving a TED talk every week to these slightly startled teenagers, but they're just opening the Bible, telling them what it says, and offering a little bit of wisdom from someone who's a little bit older. And God uses that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And yet we continually think that, you know, we want to appoint people who are inspiring. We want to find people who are going to really capture their imaginations, and think, well, just point them to Jesus, you know.
Yeah, I think very much so. And you don't know where things go. People shared things with me, some of which I can remember, some of which I can't, but they have shaped me. That God, we believe God speaks as his word, you know, in his word, and it shapes us. And even if we don't, as, you know, particularly as children, we don't know how it's impacting us. We couldn't explain how it is, but it is. And I'm being shaped by that. But then there's also some things, I know you've talked about, we're going to talk about Awesome Cutlery. This might be a little bit in advance of where we're going, but one thing relating to my teen years at church, I had a very vivid memory of one service. We often had a kind of an all-age slot where someone did a little bit from the Bible. And this one chap, John, who usually did the notices, actually, but today he was doing that day he was doing a Bible slot. And I remember crystal clear, I can remember standing up, you know, a couple of meters away from me and saying, what does the Bible say about itself? How does it describe itself? And I had no idea. And then he showed us a few places. He said, well, it's a fire and a hammer. And he showed us other verses. It's a light and it's a sword of the spirit. And so 20 years later, I was sat at a piano thinking, I'd like to write a song about the Bible. And the first thing that came into my mind was John's little all-age slot. Oh yeah, light and a hammer. That'd be a cool way to talk about the Bible, because that's how the Bible talks about the Bible. And so from then, I wrote a song, and God's been very kind and helped us share it with other people. And now that John's all-age slot is sung by thousands and thousands of people around the world. And you know, that wasn't his goal. He just teaching the Bible. And yeah, that's just one thing.
He wouldn't remember that incident.
No, I emailed him and he said, I don't remember that, but I'm glad. And he's kind of in a very down to earth way. Like, oh, good.
Yeah.
And that's, it's small things.
Hello, Kate here from Keswick Ministries. If you're enjoying this podcast, why not check out Keswick's other podcast, Kes Talks. They're a selection of talks from God's Word given at the Keswick Convention that we hope and pray will be particularly helpful to people in the times we face now. Kes Talks, available on iTunes, Spotify, and your podcasting apps.
Are there any books that stick out for you? Were you a reader? I mean, I, despite the fact that I am now a writer, I wasn't really a reader in my teen years, particularly, other than books that were funny. I didn't really see the point of any other books. But what about you?
Similar to you, I read books if they were funny. I got very into Terry Pratchett when I was a teenager,
right?
Who is not exactly pushing the Christian worldview. So I didn't read much much Christian stuff. When I got to uni that I started, was encouraged to read more Christian things.
Yeah.
Begrudgingly did. And one of those weird things, you know, there's kind of very human things where every time I did it, I thought, oh, this is really good, I should do it more. And then I wouldn't do it for the couple of months.
It's a real spiritual battle, isn't it? And reading is a discipline, like all the others, I guess. But if you can persuade our listeners to read one or two books, are there anything that you would say has helped you either in your journey to faith, maturing in the faith, or even kicking you into ministry?
A few books that particularly, I think, were great for me. I remember reading Cross of Christ by John Stott. I know often people refer to that as a classic, and it was great for me, seeing the cross is everything, and the breadth of what Jesus did for us. and kind of aligning mind and heart so that it's not just emotional. There is lots of thinking you can do about what Jesus did, and yet that doesn't stay. It doesn't stay as just thought. It transforms us into those who worship Jesus all the more. So that was great. I really enjoyed the Reform Pastor by Richard Baxter, which was great. Thinking for ministry, actually, that he was wholehearted and he did the normal. He did the hard yards. He went to see people and he preached them. And that one of the things in ministry that I keep coming back to is a line that he says. He says, "I preach as a dying man to dying men," and that is really sticks with me. Thinking I'm on the way out, and so is everyone I'm talking to. Whenever I have the privilege of preaching to them, I don't know if I'll get another go. I don't know if they'll get another go. So don't leave anything at the door, as it were. That's really stuck with me. And that even just that sentence alone is worth reading the whole book for. And you don't know, do you? Until you get into something, really what's going to jump out at you and grab you. So those are two books. There are plenty more, but those two come to mind.
Is the latter of those two the one that pushed you towards ministry? How did that come about? And there is a non-ministry version of Gareth Lowe in a parallel universe. What is he doing with his time?
To answer that, best way to say is I went to uni. I did a law degree, but very quickly realized I didn't want to take law any further. I enjoyed studying it at uni, but that was it. And then during that time, I'm getting stuck into church. I was doing more in church and really enjoying that, seeing the need for it. I also being encouraged that I had a certain amount of gifting that might be worth exploring. I then did an apprenticeship or an internship, as you might call it now, with the church for a couple of years. And I read The Reformed Pastor during that time. And that was definitely with an eye to longer term.
Yeah.
But I had, during that time, God very graciously brought to my attention that I didn't fulfill the New Testament criteria for ministry, for ministers, namely that I had a solid character. There were some things that were good, but I thought in terms of the self-control and the discipline, I realized it wasn't a right time to go into ministry, because the New Testament very much sees the congregation as reliant on the pastor, even saying things like "you will save your hearers by doing this," and thinking it's not right for me to take people.
Yeah.
You know, to take the responsibility for people. In some ways, we're never ready, but I just knew it wasn't right. So I thought, God help me see. And it was good to go and do some normal work for a while.
Yeah.
And during that time, you know, grow in character. What would non-ministry Gareth Lowe be doing? I worked for British Gas for 7 years, doing all sorts of things. I was in a big corporate environment. So I tried a bit of everything: customer service, sales management, project management. I finished up in before moving into ministry. So that I'd probably be doing something along those lines.
I live in Somerset. It's slightly in the country. We don't have gas. We dream of having gas. That's a whole different podcast there.
Well, if I was working for British Gas, maybe I would have tried to sort that. No, I wouldn't have been able to have any effect at all. But
no.
Good times.
I'm sure that's right. So you ended up in ministry, and what were you expecting ministry to be like, and how has that met or confounded your expectations? I mean, you already had a pretty high view of the expectations and the qualifications. As you've gone through college and training, and it's almost just getting started, as it were. How are you getting on?
I think my expectations have been very well set by a number of people. People helped me see the qualifications of character and seeing how important that is over the more showy gifting of I can stand up and say something that makes sense over the course of 25 minutes, seeing how important the character is, and spotting some people who have been particularly successful in ministry because of their character, especially. That's been great. So that's one thing, expectation well set on that front. I remember my wife and I got to go on an FIEC conference, which was for those thinking about ministry. And the speaker there was saying a line that I've heard a number of times and has been really powerful for me, is that pastors have to walk towards pain. And that was a real eye opener for me of what a lot of ministry is about. And having now got going, so I'm in the first 6 months of being an assistant minister, just seeing that is a part of the job, that it will hurt and does hurt And if you do it well, it really hurts. And that's definitely been the part of ministry that I've been not looking forward to, is sharing pain with people.
What sort of pain are you thinking of here?
It's the pain of suffering, kind of suffering by proxy almost, that if you really know someone and you love them and you're praying for them and you see a heartache they're going through. So let's say they've got a difficult family relationship that's spoiled, and that just weighs on them every time. And you dip into that, and it's not your tragedy and it's not your life, but you dip into it, and when you're with them, it's heavy. And when you pray for them, it's heavy. And I don't know, have you found, in terms of your emotional life as you've got older? I've definitely become more emotional as I've gone on in life.
Having kids does that to you as well, I think.
Okay, yeah. And there have been a few times. So just the other week at church, I was leading music. We were singing a song. We were singing See What a Morning, which is about the resurrection. And we got to the bit, and we will reign with him, or we shall reign with him. And I just happened to see someone who, I don't really know them very much at all, but I just know a little bit of their story. And they weren't singing, and they just had a very serious expression on their face. And it totally got me. And I couldn't sing the next line because I was choked up, because the juxtaposition of hope versus where they're at and what they must be experiencing. And that's just a fragment. And it's a real privilege of ministry, I think, to get close to people, because they tell you stuff that they wouldn't tell anybody else. And hopefully, if you've got the right character, you can hear it and not judge them for it. And you don't share it, you know, with more than is appropriate, all those kind of things. And you are the one to carry that burden with them, you know, just a little bit. It is theirs first and foremost. But that pain, my expectations were set, but you just don't know until you do it. You can't get it from a book.
And I guess that's the invisible ministry that most of us don't see, who aren't in the ministry, is we see someone preaching, we see someone leading meetings, we see them, you know, at church meetings and administratively or whatever, but that pastoring, that pain is hidden. And I guess the world's wisdom is also, you need to protect yourself, you need to keep a distance, you need to make sure that you don't, because you've got a long way to go, man. Because you are, if I may say so, a young man, and you've presumably got 40 years of ministry ahead of you. How do we set expectations but also develop disciplines that will mean that you can keep going rather than having to shut yourself off?
In some ways, what I'm about to say can't matter that much, because I don't know. That's obviously a question for someone who's at the upper end of ministry life. I think for me, it's certainly a case of trying to build that habit of stepping towards pain and asking people how they are, even though I kind of dread the answer because I know they're probably not doing very well. For me, I'm still too far away. I need to get closer to people and get to know them more. And it is a difficult thing. Like how far is too far? How much, we don't want to burn out. So to be so burdened that we become useless to people, that is, and that's when you think about someone in the medical profession, let's say, you know, who's delivering bad news, and then they've got another appointment in 2 minutes' time. They can't succumb to that emotion. They have to distance themselves, otherwise they won't last a day. Ministry is different to that, because it's longer term, and it's not, you probably don't see so many people, I suppose, as well. I think feeling their pain and then thinking and praying with them, what is the gospel hope in that? What does Jesus say? How does God bring any life? I suppose that's when it'll be the hardest, is if I, or anyone in ministry, we're not close to what God says. We don't feel his presence. We're not enjoying him or finding it hard to believe what he says. Then we will slowly sink under the waves. I don't have anything clever. And I think from what I can tell, there isn't anything clever. It's trust God and pray for his help. And again, going back to that ordinary life, just every day coming back to Jesus and saying, I really can't do this, but I'm glad you can. It's a life and a hammer, it's a fire in the soul, it's the voice of a father, the word of the Lord. The blade of the spirit can cut to the soul, and God will use it to make us. So as I've hinted, not very subtly, you are masquerade as a superhero called Captain Awesomeness. And you are part of a bunch called Awesome Cutlery with your friend Dan Adams. Why don't you just explain to listeners who think, I understand what the words awesome and cutlery mean, but I don't know why they're next to each other or what
what we're referring to. Why don't you just explain what Awesome Cutlery is?
Awesome Cutlery is a family music ministry, which is all about helping families worship Jesus together. And that's what we're about. The name comes from, there's a bit of history to it. Dan and I been involved in various camps and holiday Bible clubs. And inevitably, anyone who's been in that sort of world knows that when you do themes each, you know, year by year, sooner or later, you're going to do superheroes. It's just one of the ones you have to do. So both he and I had been involved in separate superhero camps. And he'd been in a camp, I'd been in a holiday club with a theme. And we'd both been doing drama. So he'd had a character called Cutlery Boy, which went down brilliantly on this camp. And then a few years later, I did one and at my church holiday club, and came up with this hero, Captain Awesomeness, who is, his name says everything about him. He's trying extra hard to be great and is really anything but. Dan and I, we'd done that. And then a few years after that, we started thinking about doing an album and starting a music ministry. And we thought it'd be great to give it a theme. And then very quickly we thought superheroes. And then, why don't these two characters who had gone well at the camp and holiday club, why don't they team up? Captain Awesomeness, Cutlery Boy. Oh, hang on, there's a name there. And Awesome Cutlery.
Well, you
born.
Say that, it's just like, oh, and then the name was staring us in the face. Awesome Cutlery. Did she go, yeah, I guess.
One of the strengths of our team up is Dan and I are very different. We're united about in Jesus and in ministry philosophy. And we both like music, but apart from that, like everything, we're different in almost every other way. So I'm really impulsive. Dan's very measured and thoughtful. I like things to be done. He likes them to be done well. So either Awesome Cutlery, that'll do. And he would ask the questions about it. But that was definitely one thing I thought early on. And it's worked on the whole. I think some people think, oh, it's not very descriptive, is it? It's an interesting thing to me that people expect music ministry stuff to be very descriptive.
Right.
I think maybe in our Christian circles, we just like labels that tell us what they are exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I can identify with that as the presenter of the Keswick Convention podcast, which there's no surprises. There were other names were suggested, and I said, do you know what? When people just look at all the podcasts, they just need to see what is it. I need to know what it is. So there we go.
Well, that's it. Well, if you've got a brand that people are looking for, it's quite different. We had, you know, we started from nothing. And people would say we're still pretty much at nothing. But when you're a blank sheet of paper, then you can be a little bit different.
Well, you say you're not nothing. Why don't you say what you are in terms of, you know, what does that ministry look like?
The main area of ministry has been writing music and then producing albums. So we've done two albums. First one came out in 2016, and then the other one, second one came out Christmas just gone, 2019, and they are. They're songs we've written together, some of us, you know, some more with me, some more with Dan, but they're songs we've written together, and they have sketches with the two superheroes on. So that's the kind of main aspect of our ministry. And then accompanying that, we've produced a devotional booklet that looks at some of the Bible verses that have informed the lyrics to those songs. And that's for families to sit down and do together, little devotional. And so we have one came out with the first album, and then the second one for this album is just going to print now. And then the third third wheel of the ministry is we do live shows.
So let's just go back and work out, why do you want to be part of a ministry that makes sure that families can worship Jesus together?
Because as a dad, it's just hard to do that.
Why is it hard?
Because life is frenetic now, and there are so many things we could do, it's hard to know what's right. There are many things you think, oh, I want to do that, I want to do this. Even things that we just know are utterly good and everyone wants to do, like hang out with your mates. Everyone wants to do that. But if you talk to, like, if I talk to any of my friends in the same stage as me, they basically, oh, I'll never really see my mates anymore. I'd like to, but it doesn't happen.
Mm.
And life gets swamped with stuff. Not necessarily the stuff we choose, but it is swamped. And so as a parent, any help someone can give me to do something that I do deep down want to do with my children, my family, and I should be doing as their dad, any help that someone can give me is really appreciated. And maybe selfishly, by doing the ministry, it's made me do more of it with my own children.
But it's interesting that you say that this is about worshipping Jesus as a family together. This is not something that you're saying, well, here's a CD you can give to your kids. Well, they don't know what to do with CDs, but most kids think, oh, a CD is something that you put into the car stereo.
That's right. They must think it's like petrol, but for the music player.
Yes. And it's also on Spotify, isn't it? So people can kind of get hold of it. But what is it about worshipping Jesus together as a family that is so important to you?
One of the really formative things for me and for Dan in our thinking on this. So we both studied at Oak Hill College, and Mel Lacey, who's been involved with the Keswick Convention for many years, lectured at Oak Hill whilst we were there. And she ran a module called Children and Youth for Everyone or something like that. And one of the things that really came across clearly from the scripture we looked at was how important parental ministry was, that although there's a lot, you know, a children's or youth worker might be able to do, actually it keeps coming back to the emphasis being on the parents. So when you look in Deuteronomy, it's the parents who teach their children. In Proverbs, it's the dad who's telling his son. We're not given a pattern of outsourcing in the Bible when it comes to our children. And so thinking, yeah, what we want to do is not, people can obviously use a CD or Spotify as they choose, but I hope there aren't parents who get the CD, give it to the kids, give them a pair of headphones and say, go away and listen to this. Our vision has always been actually the car, which is one of the reasons we wanted to get CDs made, is, as you say, it's one of the few places where people have CDs, that families would listen together and the parent would choose to put it on and say, well, we could listen to loads of stuff, but we're going to choose this thing. And we can talk, we can join in, and hopefully, you know, one of the things we try to do is make the CD not teeth grindingly bad for parents, so that, oh, I can listen to it with a degree of enjoyment. And then together, families can learn and we can chat about it. And so we don't talk about it as a children's ministry. We talk about it as a family ministry. Now, that's quite a fine definition, and some people won't hear that at all, but that's where we're at.
There is clearly a difference between something for children and something for families. So Peppa Pig, for example, is so clearly aimed at children that any adult who watches it for any length of time immediately wants to start smashing things, because it's, I mean, it's infuriating. And it, because it's not aimed at the parents, it is very much aimed solely at the children. Whereas there is something special though about, and I remember seeing, remember hearing John Piper speak about how children seeing their parents pray and mean it is actually a really special thing, isn't it? Is actually seeing that the parents are working out their own faith in front of them and with them, and this is something we do together, rather than just, this is also part of the exercise of eating your vegetables and all the other good stuff that we need to get kids to agree to do. There's more to it than that, isn't there?
Sometimes, I'd say this as a preacher, it's sometimes we go too quickly to individualistic applications. So even take the most, the go-to one, which I probably did in my first 10 sermons, which was, you know, read the Bible more. It's rarely a read the Bible together with your family. That's, we don't push that kind of way, whatever it might be.
I suspect reading the Bible with their kids is something that most parents listening to this podcast think they could do more of or do better, or that they should start doing. What do you think are the barriers? We talked about the busyness earlier, and there are so many things you could do. But what would you suggest beyond buy the CD and get the devotional, and that will kickstart you? But in terms of what are the habits that people can kind of get into, or where should they begin?
It sounds like starting quite far back, but I found it useful for me when thinking about awesome cutlery stuff. That why do I do this? And the reason that I'm should try and be a pastor to my children is not so that therefore I can do awesome cutlery credibly. The reason I should want to pastor my children is because I'm being pastored by God. I'm being, you know, I genuinely want to know him more. And at the best, you know, when I'm at my best, I am engaged in time with him. So I think that's where I'd go to is, firstly, is our motivation coming from guilt? Oh, I shouldn't. Yeah. I could listen to this guy called Gareth preach 10 sermons in a row, so I should teach the Bible more, read the Bible more. I should just do it.
Yeah.
Actually, guilt's not going to last. We can't live by guilt. And in fact, wonderfully, God doesn't call us to live by guilt. He says, I've set you free and given you this new life. And so as one of my children, share this with your physical children. So I think checking our motives and get right there first, because you can't draw from an empty well, as it were. You've got to have got to have be relying on Christ as a source to then pass on. So that's my first answer is just check our hearts. Why do we want to do it? And maybe usefully we could spend some time there first. Assuming then now or in the future that we think, yes, I am now, I am doing something. I'm spending some time with God. I am thinking, you know, thinking about his word and praying, spending time with him. This is a really simple level. Find something manageable and find something easy that's and get in a routine. We maybe have bought, and I know I have bought into a bit of a lie that everything needs to be new and original. And I'm going to say it again because I think it's worth saying the ordinariness of life and the ordinariness of ministry is very powerful. There's often in the Bible organic language of growth, so producing a harvest, the vine, Jesus the vine, we're the branches. And I think about how you garden, like each day it's just, I say this as someone who's terrible at gardening, you water the plants, you pick out the weeds. No day do you say, that was brilliant. Every day is, oh, I've done it. Whatever that routine, and then maybe for some people it's once a week or even once a fortnight, just finding something, okay, I can definitely commit to sitting down with my kids for 10 minutes to read a bit from this resource that we've got, or maybe it's just sharing what I've been reading in the Bible, and whatever it is, find a pattern and stick to it and just turn the handle on it.
Yeah.
And that can be really powerful. We're not called to be superheroes.
Yeah.
This is hopefully to encourage people that maybe the bar isn't as high as we put it. As a Christian minister, I'm as close to a professional Christian as you could, if that's not a complete contradiction, as you can get. You know, I'm paid to pray and teach the Bible. I had been regularly trying to read a bit of a Bible to a beginner's Bible, I think it is, to our kids. And one thing I discovered about myself only since having kids is that I have, I don't know if you call it a gift, but when I'm tired, which is like, you know, the half six time slot where I'm really tired, I have the ability to fall asleep whilst reading a mid-sentence, but my mouth keeps going. But whatever those words are after I fall asleep are nothing to do with what's on the page. So I was reading to our boys the story of the Philippian jailer and Paul getting out of prison. And I was reading and I just fell asleep mid-sentence. And I was woken up by my son spinning to me on my lap and saying, "What tortoise?" That, you know, that was not a great day of Bible teaching.
That was not a great day.
It's very rare that a kid will remember any of those individual moments.
Yeah.
But the impression that it leaves is huge.
Yeah.
So don't despise the little things. You know, how we learn. Like, I don't remember anyone teaching me how to speak English. I don't remember it, and yet I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. And you don't, most kids will not remember when their parents first told them about Jesus or many things in the Bible, but they will remember. And so I encourage that, finding a pattern that's easy, that you can commit to, and just sticking to it and not guilting yourself into it, but thinking, I'm just trying to share from something God's given me.
Well, only a superhero is in a position to praise the power of the ordinary. And so, Gareth, you have your alter ego, Captain Awesomeness, and you can be seen with Cutlery Boy at the Virtually Keswick Convention, and people can find out more about that at keswickministries.org, and they can find out more about Awesome Cutlery at awesomecutlery.com. Find them on Facebook, where there are also lots of shows that they've been doing over lockdown, so you can get much more of a flavour of what they get up to and enjoy them with your family. Maybe make that a regular thing. So thanks very much for listening. Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you.
And we'll speak to you next time on the Keswick Convention podcast.